Okay, folks, welcome to another edition of the No Mic Podcast. My name is Mitch Maxine. If you have any comments, questions, please send them to the No Mind Podcast Facebook page, my personal Facebook page, or email them to nomindpodcast2021@gmail.com. Once around the table real quick, it's the same old crowd. Let's start with Darren. How you doing, man?
It seems like it's been weeks since we've been here.
Maybe that's it's been weeks since we've been here.
Probably, yeah. I think it's that portion of my life that's missing. And funny enough, I was invited to a party tonight. I haven't seen these people since before COVID, so I felt obligated to make it. Funny enough, I really wanted to do the podcast.
You fool.
I text back to the people and I said, look, did you just pick Friday night out of the blue or could we switch it to Saturday? And they said, well, we picked Friday because we assumed you had a gig Saturday. And I said, we don't have a gig this Saturday. Switch the party to Saturday so I could do the podcast Friday. So it's actually, I miss this when it's not on.
That's dedication.
It is, and actually I'm glad that you're not missing the party to do this mess. So I'm glad you still get to go to the party and be a part of this. That's awesome. Bob, what's going on?
Well, geez, that was very gracious of Darren to say and do that. I don't have anything going on, so I've got nothing better to do. Here I am. No, it's good to be here. It's fun.
Len, how are you, man?
Good. It's like Darren said, I've actually missed this for the last couple of weeks. I felt like I was really missing out because you guys were partying and tournaments and reunions in Canada, and I'm sitting back here in Ireland going, wish I could have gone there. But now, the dream team is back together tonight.
Just to give some context to what Lenny was talking about, 2 weeks ago we had our parent club, Jushin Karate School, had its 50th anniversary. There was a big tournament, and so we couldn't do any podcasts that week. And Darren came all the way from Ireland for that. But that was a great amount of fun, but I'm glad to be back doing the podcast. So, okay, let's get to the topic. Tonight,
It's pretty deep. It's pretty deep.
Yeah, this one got me really thinking.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's the title of the podcast is Martial versus Art. And in broad terms, it's just discussing the artistic side or the art side of the martial arts versus the martial side. So let's go around the table once real quick and any initial comments you have to make. Bob, what do you think?
Well, I'm afraid that if I make my initial comment, I'll be repeating the same thing during the entire episode because I only really have one thought about this, I think. Hopefully the conversation will flower once it goes on. But
like it always does.
My thinking is that I don't know why this happened to me. I guess it's because karate was my first. And so I have always been thinking of it as practical and martial and way to defend yourself and always trying to get better in that regard, less so the arty side. But then after, what, 5, 6 years, 7, I don't know how many years of doing it, I started to look elsewhere for more of the art-oriented type things, the judo, the aikido, the capoeira, the whatever else it did, I forgot, kendo. Anyway, that's sort of the way I have it divided in my mind, even though I could go further into it, and I'm sure I will later, but those are the initial thoughts.
Lenny.
Yeah, you threw me a curveball with this one, because I never actually really sat down and went through the concept of, is this an art form? It was very much a practical thing, and the whole art thing has had me really, my head has been bamboozled all week, so hopefully I don't drag this too long tonight, but yeah, that's me, short and sweet.
Awesome.
As a segue before we go into this.
Yeah, I have to agree with totally what Bob said. It's you just start off with what you know, and it's not until you kind of diverse elsewhere that you realize there's other aspects of it. And I think I kind of went in ebbs and flows over the years where I went for the practicality, but then later on I kind of started to appreciate the art side of things and sort of explored that and enjoyed that for what it was and drifted back to the practicality side. And kind of continuously went back and forth. So as the discussion goes on, more thoughts and stuff will come out. But at this stage, I accept both. And then as we get into the discussion, it'll go on from there.
You know, it's funny because my thought process when I started had nothing to do with practicality. I was never in an environment where I felt like I needed to fight. I never had any sort of practical thoughts when I joined. So I was pretty malleable when I first joined, and I leaned quite heavily toward the art side more than the martial side. I remember, you know what? I'm taking conversation away from the actual topics. But this is going to be interesting because I think we've got some pretty divergent perspectives here. So let's start with this. When I sent out the talking points, I included a definition of what art is. And we can even argue whether this is a decent definition to move from, but here's what it is. Art is a diverse range of human activity and resulting product that involves creative or imaginative talent expressive of technical proficiency, beauty, emotional power, or conceptual ideas. Does anybody have a problem with that definition, or what do you think of that definition?
It's pretty all-encompassing. I think it's good.
I thought it was too, and I thought it was particularly poignant relative to the topic at hand. Are we okay with moving on with that as a definition?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty comprehensive, and I like it, and yeah, that's fine.
Okay, terrific. So, in broad terms, discuss the value of the term martial art. How can combat sports be defined in an artistic way?
Well, one of the most creative aspects of when I was growing up in karate was putting together demonstration routines, which was entirely creative. You did what you want, and you put in what you wanted, and that was a great experience. And it also brings to mind that the performance of a kata itself can be creative in a number of ways. How you treat it, the pace, the goal you have in mind while you're doing it. Whether you may think that you are, in a practical sense, defending yourself during a kata, which don't get me started on how false that is, but that's a different topic. Or whether there was a definition of kata that I heard when I was 15 years old and first starting that kata was moving meditation, and I kept that in my head for a very long time, and it's kind of true, in a sense. When you're doing a kata, you can concentrate on how your body's moving, how rooted you are on the floor, the transfer of power from your heels to your fist, or you can think of it as actually being in a fighting situation and using the techniques of the kata to defend yourself. So anyway, those are two ways of that the creative aspect of karate really struck with me.
Okay, I want to pause there for a second because you hit on a couple of really, really interesting talking points. One of them was demos, but let's leave that aside for a second and let's go to the kata side. Because Len, and I want to point this question at Lenny specifically, we've talked about kata a number of times on the podcast in the past, and yeah, you always seem to lean toward kata being a solo application of practical technique. Do you look at kata as strictly that, as strictly a methodology to practice practicality in a solo environment, or do you see it as an artistic, imaginative, creative endeavor?
Really messed the whole thing up now, so I see it more as a science form than an art form, but that's, it's got a technical side to it, and that's when it becomes, in my mind, it becomes science rather than art. We would have seven katas you'd have to know on your way to your shodan. Of those, there's probably two would be practical in terms of everything put together in it is something very, very useful, and you can, if you broke it down into bunkai of it, you can say, yeah, that's actually going to work. We also have the rest of them, not that they're impractical, but they have a practical benefit in that, like all katas, they work on strength, they work on balance, they work on targeting, so that side of it is invaluable.
Can I ask you a question? I'm sorry, yeah, to cut you off, but
no, it's cool.
A question jumps into my head here. Kata is by definition a solo process.
Yep.
How can you define any kata as practical when by definition it's practiced alone?
My best way to kind of answer that is that if I'm practicing one of our katas, everything in my head is visualizing the attacker in front of me. Although I'm doing it alone, I'm making sure my strikes, my blocks, grabs, you name it, kicks, are all on point of where the correct targeting should be. So in terms of its technical proficiency, and you're taking it from being a solo practice, it's, for want of a better word, the invisible man is in front of you, and if he's there and you're going to strike, you're going to strike him in the correct place.
Yes, but the problem is that invisible man in front of you is doing what you're telling him to do. You're controlling what that imaginary adversary is doing, and you are controlling the dynamic that exists between the two of you. By definition, that means it's not practical because you're telling what the other you're defining how the other person is reacting. You're defining how the other person is attacking. So I'm struggling to understand how solo practice of kata can, by any definition, be defined as practical, simply because I get the idea of envisioning an attacker. But when you envision an attacker, you're telling that attacker what to do. You're thinking, now he's doing this, so I will do this, and he will react to what you're doing in any way you tell that attacker to react. So to me, that bleeds all the practicality out of that type of practice.
It does in the scenario you're trying to present. However, that's why you have so many katas with so many moves. It's kind of, okay, that might have worked for this. Let's try if this happens. Let's try if this happens. And that's why you've got so many vast katas. To me, it's still invaluable. Put it in another guy in front of you and throw stuff at you that you're practicing. Yes, you're telling him to behave in a certain way, but it's still teaching you how to move out of the way, how to avoid it, how to block. As Bruce Lee said, fear not the man who practices 1,000 kicks once, but the man who practices one kick 1,000 times. It's got to be beneficial in honing your perfection.
Only if you do it with somebody else.
I disagree.
a point that I think about often is that what would happen if I attacked you with any technique I want, and I want you to respond with a movement from a kata? It's not going to happen.
Well, Bob,
this is what grates on the back of my mind when it comes to kata training.
I'll take issue with that one. In that when I showed on grades at the end of every night, we put a guy in who's been through all his katas, he's been through all his pre-rehearsed, shall we say, techniques and spar and so on and so forth. We introduce an element, we put him in the middle of the floor, and we have four attackers around him. One's got an imitation knife. We don't like to mess with knives, but just for the purpose. He's got a blunt instrument. Somebody else is going to punch, somebody else is going to kick. But they can punch, kick, attack, any way they want. Basically, what happens at the start is he gets told who's coming at him in what order. Then they come at random, and then we say nothing. And they will come at him whatever way they want. And it's up to him to defend himself. But what we're looking for that is to him to apply some way, shape, or form stuff he has from his kata or his techniques.
Yeah, go ahead, Darren.
So many things to say from start to finish. I'll just take that last one that Lenny was saying. It's almost guaranteed that if he just did kata for 5 years and then you threw him in that scenario, he would fail. I'm assuming that you have put those people in those scenarios prior to that grading. So he's not necessarily drawing on his experience of practicing the kata a lot of times, but he's drawing on his experience in being in those situations prior to that grading, if you know what I mean.
But I'm not arguing the point that kata on its own is the be-all and end-all. It's got to be combined with conventional training as well. It's a useful tool.
The other thing before I forget is, just to touch on, I'm neither for or against kata. I think everything has its place. The one thing I was thinking of, obviously working out with somebody is more beneficial than not. So if you're doing a kata, you're not working out with someone. But I go, and I don't know the science of this. I'm not a coach in this. But if you take boxing, they hit the heavy bag all the time and they hit the speed bag. So I would have
thought... They also shadow box.
Exactly. Well, that's just to warm up. But if you're... But they do hit heavy bags a lot of times, and the speed bags. If I was using the same analogy that we're kind of trying to portray kata in, I'd be saying, look, all you need to do is box with somebody better than you all the time and you'll learn the skills. But there must be a reason why they hit the heavy bag, whether it's for strength or whatever you get from it, there's a reason they use that. And that's obviously you're dictating how the bag moves, you're hitting it, it's not hitting you back. So by the definition that, say, Mitch and Bob were just saying with regards to kata, that you're dictating the pace of the kata, therefore it serves no benefit. Why do people hit heavy bags? Do you know what I mean? Why not just constantly spar and then you'll be a better boxer? So okay. Now I don't know the answer to that. I'm just assuming that there is reason, and I'm assuming kata could be applied in the same method or reasoning behind hitting the heavy bag.
Okay, I'm loving this conversation because this typifies exactly why I came up with this particular topic. We've been taking kata and talking about it in a practical framework. Let's take kata and talk about it as an artistic endeavor. Forget about practicality. Does kata take on any significance in terms of an artistic expression? And I'm gonna do what I usually don't do and answer first. I think kata is flat out useless in terms of practicality. If you want practicality, leave Kata at the front door. There are way more effective ways to implement practicality in your training. Kata as a tool to lead you to practicality is a flat out waste of time, and I will die on that hill. However, I think Kata is a beautiful, it's esoteric and sublime expression of the beauty of karate, and that's why I practice Kata. I don't practice Kata because it allows me to be more practical in my application. I practice Kata because I think it's a unimpeachable expression of the artistic side of the martial arts.
Mitch, yeah, you're pretty intense there. I hear both sides, and I got to agree with Mitch on that. Like, I know what you're saying, Lenny, and that's kind of how we were all brought up to be. Kata is practical, blah, blah, blah. But the real is, if I only have an hour to practice a week or 2 hours, two classes a week or something like that, and if I'm going for the practicality side of it, I don't want to waste a class for an hour doing kata.
Yeah.
I want to spar, and I want to do self-defense, and I want to actually learn to defend myself. Kata doesn't teach that.
And
it has the element of it, but realistically, no.
Len, I know you want to say something, but I just want to insert one argument here before I forget it.
Right there.
One of the biggest pieces of evidence that I hold in my back pocket relative to the practicality of kata is if you look at, and there's dozens and dozens of videos on YouTube about MMA fighters and their training camps and what they do to prepare for fights, not one of them uses kata as a tool to prepare for a fight. If kata was a reasonable way of prepping for a practical encounter, I would think one MMA fighter would implement kata as part of their training practice, but none of them do. If you want to learn to fight, fight. If you want to learn to do kata well, then do kata. But in my head, never the twain shall meet. Sorry, Len, go ahead.
No, you're okay.
Can I just say something funny?
No.
I remember seeing a video.
It's funny, wait.
And George St. Pierre, because he had a black belt in karate, and he did a kata one time because he was a guest appearance at some club. And here, I love George St. Pierre. He is what he is. But he did a kata, and it was hilarious.
I saw it too.
It was terrible.
Wasn't good.
So, I mean, he obviously didn't take the artistic side of it too seriously.
Now, having said that, I don't want to step in the ring with George St. Pierre.
No, that's what I said. There's nothing
that guy, that guy can fight. But I think that lends itself to that point I just made. I don't think kata really has a place in terms of practical application. And Len, I hope it doesn't sound like we're beating up on you. So go ahead.
No, because first and foremost, I'm going to say, if you offered me the choice of which is going to benefit you more, I'll turn around and I'll say, we're getting physical here, lads. We're not doing kata. So I'm firmly in your camp. The only argument I'm making is I do think it's beneficial. I will say there's a couple of katas we do. They're form two, it's called. It's all against locks and holds, which is quite practical. But the rest
of them, not if anybody's holding you.
Exactly.
Or putting you in a lock.
No, I understand. It helps you refine the technique that when it is put in practically, it benefits in that sense. Your body mechanics, correct execution of the movement and that.
Don't want to be negative here, but we're now getting into the practicalities of kata as opposed to martial arts. And
right. Well, I was just going to say, it's also very different because the style I come from is very different as well. And without actually standing and saying, okay, here, but let me show you this, I can't. It's hard for me to describe practically exactly what I mean.
I just want to add one little thing.
Yes,
Has everybody seen that martial art guy, the new guy in the movies, Michael Jai White?
He's not new, he's old now, but yeah.
All right. Well, I'm a lot older, so he's new. He's trying to introduce that whole kata into a practical thing, right?
We watched that video, Bob, on
That's what I was going to ask. And it came off a little awkward in my mind, but I just want to throw that in.
Let me draw this back to the original question. We've got 7 other talking points, and we've been going for half an hour.
Half an hour picking on me.
Well, not you, just what you believe.
love the sinner, hate the sin.
Okay, so I'm going to put out this question. Let's go around the table once. Just 15, 20 seconds to answer this. We'll go on to the next question. Should any combat form be described as an art?
My first thing I was going to say at the start is, I'm going to try to keep it under 30 seconds, is we are calling it now in whatever, the year 2000, it probably started however many years ago, decades, where we coined the term martial arts. But I don't think that was the term originally used for it. So now we're having the debate whether it's an art form, but the term that we are associating the word art with is not the way it originally was. So I kind of did like a quick research sort of thing. And one of the things was, it says the term martial arts itself is derived from an older Latin term meaning arts of Mars, which is a Roman god of
Roman
war.
Roman god of war.
And
just beat me to it.
It was used to refer to the combat systems of Europe, blah, blah, blah.
It's the art of being a warrior.
Okay, but we're still using the word art, the art of being a warrior.
But what we consider as art now is not the word, whatever that word was, that's not what it meant back then. You know, words change, like even the word.
Yeah, of course.
But another interesting thing, what I found, whatever, the Chinese character Mu, which forms part of the words for martial arts, obviously derived as it got into whatever Japanese, wherever it came from, even before Chinese, literally means to stop fighting or to put down weapon. The word, quote, arts in martial arts points to, quote, skill, the expression of beauty or creativity. The combination martial arts may be interpreted to mean ending conflict skillfully. Peace is the ultimate goal of the martial arts.
Which, just an interjection here, Mu, you brought up the term Mu. Mu Shin means no mind.
Oh, like the podcast.
Right.
Nice segue there, Bob. Nice segue. Here, and I didn't know any of this. I just did a bit of research, so I'm only going by what I found on the internet. My thing was, as soon as we just we're taking the martial arts as literally as what we see as an art, but that's not necessarily where the expression came from. So it's hard to argue whether it's an art form or not. Does it really matter?
Kind of
just,
does.
We're just kind of calling it an art.
For my part, Aikido is as close to an art form and a non-martial thing as you can get in this whole universe. Now, you can argue this with people who are actually practicing it. Many of them will insist that it's practical, but I certainly would argue the point in high volume. But to me, it's beautiful, and that's almost all it's supposed to be. It's the learning of body mechanics and upsetting of balance, and it's entirely rehearsed. Don't fool yourself into thinking anything else. The person performing the techniques knows exactly what's coming, and the person who's attacking knows exactly what to attack with, and it's all prearranged. It's like professional wrestling in that regard. So if you can make professional wrestling as beautiful as possible, it would come out to be Aikido.
The thing is, I think that you can apply that same definition of artistic expression to karate. Look, I've seen a couple of techniques.
Totally.
I've seen a couple of techniques performed in a free sparring environment that I still look back on and go, those were artistically beautifully performed.
The nickname that boxing has is the sweet science.
I have seen things done in a practical framework in karate that will forever live in my mind as the ultimate expression of an art form, because it was an understanding of something, of a circumstance that played out into a perfectly practical and aesthetically beautiful combination of techniques. Those are the things that I think elevate the martial arts above a martial environment into the realm of artistic.
I agree, and I think I've noticed it before in some of these discussions on the podcast, is you can relate it a lot to other sports. And I just happened to watch a basketball movie last night, and the same thing, it's practical in the sense that they're doing it professionally, but you see a perfectly executed play where they're running down the court, the passes are perfect, and the guy performs some wicked move that ends up scoring the thing, and it ends up being a work of art. It doesn't happen every game, might happen in every 1,000 games, but when you see it, it's a work of art. And I think it's the same with martial arts. It's a combat sport. It's, as Mitch just described, if it's done so beautifully and perfectly, it's a work of art.
The operating phrase is like creativity in the midst of chaos. Like you're in a fight and yet you can be creative in it. And that is close to the definition of art.
Martial side of, okay, it's, we can all agree, it's associated with war and combat because it comes from Mars, the Roman god, and so on. So a martial artist is someone who trains in the skills of war or combat. But I heard somebody say once, and I just checked it there on a definition as well, it says an artist is a person who habitually practices a specified activity. So it doesn't really matter what it is, once you're habitually practicing it, you are an artist.
I'm going to argue that. I can habitually practice mass murder. That doesn't make it an art form. No, the point is, I think...
No, I understand. Yeah, I understand.
Can I just interject? Everybody's seen the movie A River Runs Through It?
No.
No.
Oh, never mind.
You watched a Brad Pitt movie?
Meryl Streep or something.
It's a Brad Pitt, Robert Redford movie, and one of the themes during the movie is that they go fly fishing all the time. And,
right, yes, that I remember.
And they learn how to fly fish and blah, 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 and eventually Brad Pitt's character gets so good at fly fishing that he makes up his own style. With his imagination and creativity, has discovered a new way of doing the technique, doing the thing, that sort of revolutionizes the whole idea in everybody's mind. And that can take place in our universe as well.
Here's a description of an artist. It says, artist is something that's created. An artist must be someone who creates and is not limited to one medium, activity, or skill.
Len, I'm going to ask you a question. I'm sorry. Yeah. I hope it doesn't sound like I'm beating up on you.
No, I'm here.
Can you read the first line of that definition again?
Art is something that is created.
Okay, pause. In terms of your practice of the martial arts, what have you created?
It can get cryptic on that.
And it can, because I'm asking myself, when I ask you that, I'm asking myself too. All I've created is a broken down old man who can't really do anything anymore.
Yes.
I've never really contributed in terms of creativity.
You have.
Slow down. Holy shit.
You have, because the minute you step
off, the minute you step into a dojo,
the minute you step into a dojo as an instructor and you pass on your knowledge, you're creating.
Nope. Shall I bring up any one of those videos we watched a few podcasts ago?
No, I'm talking about you. You said what have you
created? You don't know that. You and I have spent exactly 9 minutes together in a dojo. I'm telling you.
It was 2 hours.
Okay, 2 hours, but fine. I was really tired.
I could safely say that you've come up with stuff that wasn't taught to you. You've created it on your own. You've got your own take on things. You've altered things that you've been taught over the years and fixed it to what you thought made it work better. That's creation in itself. I've seen that time and time again.
All right, fine.
So I have to
shut
that down.
All right.
That's the way it is.
Yeah.
Mitch begrudgingly accepts. Well,
100%.
Son of a bitch.
Well, I've created a successful business on martial arts that has 200 members. Surely, you know, I've created something.
Yeah, rub it in there, Len. Can't argue that. That's a perfectly valid point. I do want to say this, though. Part of my thought process, and again, this just links back to why I fucking love these podcasts. In the last 15 minutes, my perspective on the artistic form of the martial arts has expanded beyond what it ever was, what I've ever developed it to in the last however many years I've been training. I realized that I used to think that kata was the ultimate expression of the artistic side of the martial arts, and now I'm realizing it's not. It's okay, but it's laden with repetition. It's weighed down by...
It's restricted.
Yes, but sparring... I'm looking back over watching people fight and seeing those particular movements that were done with such precision and such eloquence and such beauty. That, to me now, is the ultimate expression of the artistic side of the martial arts. So,
but
yeah, Bob.
It's only in kata that you can think about the things I mentioned before, the feeling of your heel pressing into the floor and the twist of the hip. And but how it transfers power into the fist.
But shouldn't the goal be to be able to do that in sparring as well?
No. No, don't think about that stuff at all.
No, but the point... Okay, sorry, not think about, but express it when you're sparring.
Sure. But that's beside the point. No, that's beside my point.
Here, I actually...
My point is that you think these things while you're doing kata and can only think these things while doing kata.
But isn't it a more artistic expression when you don't have to think about it, you just do it?
No, no. That is the artistic expression. That is what goes on in your... It's the stuff that goes on in your head while you're thinking these things.
Okay, but let's take a step forward from the artistic expression to the implementation of that expression without the thought process. Isn't that a more elevated perspective on the artistic side of kata?
Not a bit. I think it's...
Oh, you're fucked,
it
man.
Perfectly, I think it perfectly states...
Debate over, you're just wrong.
I think it perfectly states the equal nature of the martial and the art. Like you said, this is starting to get me thinking, and why I actually love kata, because that is the chance we have to connect with that part of what's going on.
Darren, I know you want to say something. Just give me 15 seconds to respond to that. I agree, Bob, that the intellectual process you go through during kata is absolutely an expression.
It's not intellectual. That's my point. It's emotional.
Tree falling in the wood.
Hang on. Whatever process you go through, emotional reaction is wasted without intellectual input. I'll just
That's
leave
not
it
true.
At that.
That's
nope, not
true.
At all.
Oh,
not
it's
a bit
so
true.
Come on, guys.
If I poke an autistic person with a needle. With an emotion.
What?
No, I'm not being.
If I torture an autistic person,
I'm just saying there's no intellect there.
That's not a good thing to do. I think we can all agree.
Intellect gets in the way.
Emotion from that person.
Of course, it
intellect.
Does. Okay. I'm not saying you can't have an emotional reaction without. Wait a second. Wait. Let me qualify it. Of course you can feel something emotionally without an intellectual input, obviously. What I'm saying is...
That's contradicting what you said.
But I'm changing what I said.
That's fine. Yeah, cool. Sorry.
What I'm saying is, to elevate something to the level of artistic endeavor...
Then you need intelligence.
That's what I'm saying. Is
no!
But yeah. Hang on. Wait, Bob.
I'll agree with that.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry, Bob, I agreed with that.
Yes, you have an emotional involvement in what you're doing, but what makes it artistic is the intellectual input that you infuse into
it. No!
Oh, come on, man!
I'm a painter. I'm a master painter, and I'm painting a masterpiece. What part does intellect have in this?
You have to know what you're doing. You have to know what paints to use. You have to know your material. You have to.
And
know,
that is not part of the. You've got this in your unconscious. This is not conscious anymore.
Okay, but
you would have had to learn it at some point. So you would have had to apply some degree of intellect in order to get to the point.
In the past,
where you
sure, but we're past that. I think we should think about it as consciousness versus unconsciousness.
Yeah, but now we're talking
versus
about
emotion.
Okay, but now you're making my point for me, because when you spar, that's unconscious. But it's based on the intellectual and emotional input that you...
Went
that
through you in the past?
Yes. That's
okay,
how you get
fine.
To okay, so when you spar, it's a marriage of that emotion
no.
to the
when
intellect.
When you spar, intellect has no part.
It did.
Or else you won't perform well. You won't perform well.
Not true.
If
not,
you're thinking,
like, no. If you take you just take the average UFC fighter, and you take the first round, and Buddy loses the first round, but he makes intellectual adjustments in order to overcome what caused him to lose the first round.
That's in between rounds. That's the point.
But that's an intellectual consciousness that he's making a conscious intellectual effort to change what he was doing.
Between rounds.
No.
During the fight, that has no part.
Sometimes he's doing it, he might be doing it during the round.
And that's when he'll get knocked out.
I don't want to speak to anything other than my reaction to what Bob has just said. I've sparred in a lot of tournaments, and there wasn't one where I didn't, while I was fighting... Part of me didn't go, okay, think, don't just react. You need to think about what you're doing.
Yep.
You thought before you struck.
Absolutely.
You didn't think while you were striking, is my point.
So,
a fraction of a second, how are you going to think during that? You have to think of it before,
obviously. Wait, that's not a bad delineation. So, Bob, what you're saying is, when I'm standing in front of somebody, I can think all I want, but the moment that thought turns into action, thought process stops and it becomes
of course, yes.
Oh, dear God. We're drawing some pretty interesting lines.
We're in the weeds. Definitely psychology here.
I'm getting a nosebleed, man. Okay.
I'm not even sure
what we're talking about anymore.
This is awesome. I love this topic.
Okay. So there's the first talking point.
Can I say something about the first?
Absolutely, please. Yeah.
Only because it's going back to what we were talking about, kata, practicality, how it fits in, artistic, all that kind of stuff. But I just equate it to just getting a general education. There's that thought process that if you want to be a plumber, you go to plumbing school, you learn how to plumb, and that's it. If you want to be an electrician, you go to electrician school, and you do that. But generally speaking, if you go to get an education, even if you want to be an electronic engineer or whatever it is, your first port of call is your Bachelor of Arts, which encompasses a wide range of education, and you slowly narrow it down to where you want to perfect or whatever your career goal is. But they teach you a broad range of stuff. And I kind of take that into karate, where kata happens to be one of the broad range of things that you must learn as part of your overall education. And later on, if you want to go do the artistic side of things, or you want to compete in kata or do whatever, then you can branch off and do that. If you want to go into an MMA fighter, you can do that. If you want to be a teacher, you do that. But generally speaking, up to, say, we'll just go with black belt level, you're going for your BA. And you're learning everything there is. And then when you get to black belt, you can decide whether you want to teach, whether you want to get into practicality, whether you want to explore other martial arts, or whatever it is. But kata just happens to be one of the things that you must learn as part of your education. And then where you want to take it after that is fine. Does that make sense?
That's a perfectly valid viewpoint. That's absolutely right.
Nail on the head.
You learn the basics when you're a beginner, and then when you're more advanced, you do.
But I think we were putting a lot of onus on kata. It's like if I'm studying, it doesn't matter whether I'm studying. If I'm studying psychology, I still got to take English or math or something stupid like that. That isn't what my career goal is, but I still have to take it. But it's part of your overall education, and it's good to have.
I will argue that some people go into the martial arts with a specific goal in mind. If I'm going into a university education because I want to be an astrophysicist, I don't want to take English courses, because that's not going
to have to. But you still have to.
Is that necessarily a good thing?
No, I was just I wasn't saying whether it was good or bad. I was just equating it with an education.
Fair enough.
Like, instead of just saying, look, I want to learn to fight, therefore kata is not part of my curriculum. Well, unfortunately, in order to learn to fight, you must learn a broad range of things. And then once you have all that, then we'll move you on into that aspect of your education.
I'm not sure that's true.
I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm sure if I'm a kid and I want to be an electrician, I should just be able to do it.
Huh.
But I think sometimes when you start off, as we all know, and we've actually talked about before, when you start off on your karate path or martial arts path, things change along the way. So you might have entered it to be a fighter and then learned that you never actually want to fight, and then you're doing it for a different reason. Same thing, if I'm 6 years old and I say, look, I want to be a doctor, and all they do is put me through doctor school and they don't train me in anything else, then somewhere along the line I don't want to be a doctor, I'm fucked. So it's kind of good to go into karate making you learn everything, whether you like it or not, or whether you think it's,
because you don't want to be fucked.
Because later on, you can decide where you want to take what you've learned, and then go from there. You know, like, I don't regret learning anything that I thought was stupid, because I think later on you can make the choice of whether.
I'm sorry, I've learned a lot of stuff that was stupid that I regretted. Oh my God! Okay, guys, we're hang on.
Okay,
we're
that's the first one. We got eight.
Right. We're 50 minutes in. We're gonna take our normal break and.
pour a drink or whatever.
Nice.
And yeah, giddy up. We'll come back in a couple of minutes and we'll start on the second talking point.
Wow. All right.
Oh my God. Okay, folks, we're back from the break. Let's go on to the second talking point. Some martial arts base their credibility on the notion of teaching their students to defend themselves in a real-life practical situation. I know I've seen a bunch of karate clubs that claim that. Israeli Krav Maga is based completely on practicality. How large a part do you think practicality plays in the credibility of a martial art in general and of a school in particular?
If it's a karate school, they better, or else they won't get many students. Is that right, Lenny?
Yeah, I was going to say that. It's not invalid, but it might be too popular.
Most of the advertisements I've seen in general for a variety of clubs, whether it's jiu-jitsu or karate or anything like that, they'll list what they portray, and it would be self-defense, fitness, self-confidence, like the general things. So I don't think, I personally have never seen one that proclaims to just teach you how to be a great fighter. It usually has a variety of things and benefits that you would get from it. So if you
fall into any one of those
categories, you'll be led into it. And that makes sense, because you're not saying you're going to be a great fighter, but you will learn to defend yourself. You will learn self-confidence. You will get fitness, you know, all that sort of stuff. And then you can go into it getting whatever you want out of it.
They're not going to leave out the practicality thing. That's for sure.
No, because if you just want fitness, there's loads of stuff you can do for fitness. There's other things you can do for confidence. So it kind of blends a lot of things in together. But I think if you're trying to be a successful business, you can't just say, here, come here to learn to fight like Cobra Kai or something like that, because you'll get a bunch of idiots and you won't have enough students to form a business. So I think you have to encompass a lot of philosophy in order to run a business.
That just means you market as well as you can using as many categorical, you know, claims as possible.
No, but I think that's legitimate. I think most people that are running a school, they are teaching self-defense, but they are teaching those other aspects as well.
A lot of it's people's perceptions. If you put up a sign outside your door that says karate, and 2 weeks later you take it down and you put up a sign saying self-defense, you'll have a bigger footfall in self-defense than you will on the karate side. Because people have a perception of karate, flying kicks, Bruce Lee, athleticism, you got to be flexible, you got to be this, that, and the other. When you say self-defense, you go, oh yeah, let's give this a go.
Okay, so your thoughts on a school that doesn't profess to teach any practicality at all?
How much of it has to do with friendship and forming bonds and shit?
Now, this gets into a really complicated question. That's the thing. I think there are as many reasons to join a martial arts club as there are people who join martial arts clubs. Everybody has a different perception of what they're going to get out of it. So just to keep it to the topic, what's your perception on a club that does not claim to teach any level of practical application?
Again, you're not going to get many students. An Aikido school wouldn't put nearly as much emphasis on that as a karate club. I think a karate club, it's a no-brainer. You have to put it there.
Somewhere. Yeah, but there are Aikido schools in and around the Toronto area with tons of students.
Right. They're not there for
Yeah, but practical. Yeah, but they don't claim practicality.
Right. That's my point.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
It's because you've got 2 million people, so you're going to get a demographic that gives you a lot of students that are into the art form. If you're in a town with 1,000 people and one's an Aikido club and one's a karate club, you're going to get more in the karate club just by nature of it.
Any other comments? That was a short one. Any other comments on that before we move on?
Let's put that one to bed. What you want to get out of it, or that sort of thing.
I think if people want to learn self-defense, they'll go and Google self-defense.
They'll home in on
a club that professes that. And if they want to do karate or BJJ, they'll go look for that.
First of all, when you first started, was self-defense your goal? And if right now, if you like, if you like in Men in Black had this memory eraser shone in your eyes, and you went back and started it all over again, and you wanted to do self-defense, what would you take? Now that we're all in our 50s or 60s, and we know what's going on in the world, it would be BJJ or MMA, right?
If you took it now, yeah, but if you rewind the clock when we were there, that wasn't as readily available as what, you know.
It was non-existent.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
All we heard of was Kung Fu, Karate, or Judo. That was the only three.
Yeah. When you're talking demographics, we came from a small town. I think there was two clubs in the town, and they were both karate. I don't think there was anything else in that town.
Yeah,
and so one of them, no choice.
Yeah,
one of them was called Benny's House of Karate.
Emporium of
and Bar and Grill.
Come on down.
I might have went to that one if that last little bit.
Exactly. Benny's House of Karate and Bar and Grill. Oh, fuck it, Al.
And laundry.
Hey, Len, have you ever tried like Aikido or Judo or anything like that?
Yeah, we've done some Aikido, a little bit of Jiu-Jitsu.
You ever do any karate?
Oh. Come on over and I'll show you.
Ouch.
That's different from what you do.
I have, actually, yes. Yeah. It's the one thing we try and do is if we can get other people in from other styles, we love to try it out, absolutely, as much as we can.
We should have an episode about styles.
Oh,
that's a good one, yeah, for sure.
Hang on, let me write that down. Okay, let's move on to another question then. Karate has more in common with dance than it does with any kind of practical real-world self-defense application.
Hang on, you skipped one, Ev. Don't mind playing with Mitch.
Yes, I did, but...
Yes, it does.
And it does depend on the club, but I've seen tons... I've seen tons of clubs, I'm not going to say most, but I've seen a lot of clubs that I would put in the category of a dance, and this is no denigration to dance studios, but I've seen clubs that teach martial arts, karate, that are so impractical and so nonsensical, despite what they think or what they profess, that I think they do have more in common with dance than actual credible, realistic martial arts.
I hate to beat a dead horse, but Aikido is pure dance.
And that the thing is, that's what I love about Aikido. I've talked to, and I've gone to a few Aikido seminars where the instructors, they'll talk about practicality, but when you watch them do what they do, it's clear that they understand it's not practical. I just don't see why they can't admit that it's not practical. Why is there this stigma of practicality that hangs over martial arts clubs to say that if it's not practical, it's not valid?
I have a question there.
Part of it is you have to, that's what you have to hang on your sign on the street to attract customers. And part of it is, I think everybody in their heart of hearts hopes that what they're doing is going to help them defend themselves, and unfortunately that's more or less true in different cases.
I remember the time, I took Aikido for a brief time, and what I did was take a lot of the things they did and apply that to real life situations. So I didn't study it as for the dance or whatever Aikido was supposed to do. Everything they do is legitimate. It's just it doesn't work in a lot of situations, but it can definitely work in certain situations. So like a lot of things they did, I didn't know how to manipulate the wrist and the body and things in that way. But I took that and applied it to what I was doing, and I thought it was really beneficial.
Sure, there are general concepts of Aikido that are very practical, general concepts.
100%. And and those practicalities were not taught in the art that I grew up in. So I definitely benefited by learning those little bits of Aikido that I did learn.
Learning the 180-degree pivot is awesome. Oh,
I agree with that. I think the real value of all of these different styles of martial arts kind of congeals into those individuals who can practice various styles of martial arts and incorporate the good from each of those styles into how they fight. I think the real beauty of all of these arts is to pull everything in
sift through what works and what doesn't, and just take the good and leave the bad, and on you go. And isn't that and what MMA is?
That's the definition of creativity, taking everything around you and pulling in the stuff, pulling in new stuff and incorporating it into your worldview. That's creativity.
I was just going to say the key there is into your worldview, because there's nothing wrong with just being an Aikido practitioner for life or a Judo practitioner for life.
Right.
You don't have to, like we say, we pick the good and bad. There is no good and bad. If our goal is a certain goal, then we're looking for what we think is beneficial to that goal, and that's what we're taking out of each art. But that doesn't take away from that art.
That's
just our perception of what we're trying to achieve.
That's a really, really good point. When I talk about taking things in, leaving out the good and keep, or leaving out the bad and keeping the good, I filtered that through a perspective of practicality.
Practicality, exactly.
Exactly, and I'm the last person to talk about practicality because
unless you're an artistic soul and you take in the stuff that's artistic and you leave out the martial.
Another good point. It depends on your personal life perspective. Okay, I've got a question for you. I really want to put this out, not in the talking points, but fuck it, it's my podcast. Who here has ever been involved in a real life fight where you can honestly say that you drew on your martial arts experience to deal with that circumstance, Bob?
I'll start.
Go ahead.
My example is so stupid. I was a security guard in my youth. I was supposed to oversee an emergency ward at a hospital, and a drunk guy came in and started the thing, and I ended up giving him a shooto strike to the groin.
Okay,
so Bob, there you go. Hey.
Okay, Bob, I want to ask you a question. Why do you categorize that as a stupid example? That's exactly a practical application of this.
Well, it's in my nature to be self-deprecating.
Well, you are kind of stupid, but...
I got picked on earlier.
but also, that's the only thing that's ever happened to me. So it's kind of... I'm kind of a beta male for admitting that I haven't been in any real altercations.
Oh, dude, that's not the only reason you're a beta male.
Oh,
zing! Okay, I'm actually looking forward to this. Okay, Darren, go ahead.
No, I'm not going to give it any examples, but it for wherever I end up, whatever my lifestyle is or whatever, I've been in, I wouldn't say countless, but yeah, a lot of situations where I do have to draw on that, and that's just the way it is. So I can safely say, yeah, I drew on a lot of practical applications that I
worked. Oh, Darren, you're not going to say anything? Oh.
Bob's upset that you're not giving a specific example.
I'd have to, there's loads of examples.
Okay,
do they involve Lenny? Is that the problem?
Darren, let me ask you this. Would you say that your martial arts experience held you in good stead in those circumstances?
Yep. And this goes two ways. And one thing that I'd be proud to say that it allowed me to avoid what would have been a serious conflict. Because of what you know, and you can talk your way out of it. And I think we know that as we were brought up, you're not supposed to fight. So the idea is, if it comes down to it, yeah. But I really hold true to that I would avoid conflict at any and all costs. And there'd be times where someone's, say, in your face, and you know you can dissolve the situation right there. I mean, a nice shooto to the groin, fight over, done. And you can walk away from it. But that would mean a fight. And I was trying to avoid that. So it wasn't talking my way out of it. Just knowing that I could end it just like that. So let's not resort to that. Let's try to work around it. And then you don't. So then it's fine. And then the other times where you're just dealing with a situation where it can't be resolved any other way, it ends up in a scuffle, and then you call on whatever you've been dealing with for the last however long you've been practicing.
Oh, this raises so many friggin' questions. Yeah. Like, oh, God damn it.
But just in a nutshell, in answer to Mitch's question, yeah, there's been loads of situations.
Yes.
I try to avoid them at all costs. Sometimes you can't, and that's what it is. And I've also come out the wrong end of it as well. Like, it's not like, I trained
what a lousy teaser.
I can defend every situation. There's been situations where I came out on the losing end. It's just the way it
like? Is. You motherfucker.
Jeez, Bob's getting all bitter because Darren won't be specific about his example. Okay, Len.
I've been in many situations where everything was great, and I
could tell you,
used my martial arts prowess, but I can't tell you.
Well, I kind of empathize with that a little bit. I've been in a few myself that I'm not.
Let's hear about them.
See.
See, here we go.
Bob's the guy in the front row at the strip joint screaming, "Take it off." Jesus.
And they won't, god damn it.
And he won't.
Take it off, Mitch.
Oh dear.
Oh my.
Okay, moving on. Len,
put it back on.
But yeah, put it on.
Lenny's been in loads of situations too that he's told me about.
Okay, Len, give us one.
I want one. Can I remind you of one?
One.
I believe a couple foreigners broke into your dojo one time.
They didn't break in, though. That wasn't the one I was going to tell, but yeah, okay.
That sticks out in my head.
Yeah, I was only open as a full-time dojo. Oh, Jesus, only a couple of weeks. I was there just doing a bit of maintenance and decorating and so on. The door opened early one morning. It was about 10 or 11 in the morning. And these two guys came in. They sounded Eastern European. And they asked for classes and explained basically what we had. And long story short, one guy goes, so where's the money? I thought he meant, how do you take fees? And I said, it's all done by, you know, electronic payments. And he goes, no, where's the money? Give us the money. And with that, he went to make a run at me. So I met him full on with a nice straight kick to the solar plexus, which sent him backwards through the door. And I picked up the broom that I was about to sweep the floors with and went after the other guy with the broom. And both of them went out the door high speed, basically.
Who the fuck tries to rob an instructor of a martial arts club? With no guns.
I could have been the janitor just cleaning the floors, but yeah, that was one instance. I mean,
wow.
There's been several. I worked as a firefighter and paramedic for 20 years. So
Jesus.
For us,
how old are you?
I'm 50.
How old?
You're like the wizard in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, Lenny's Gandalf.
Lenny the White.
I don't think a week went by we didn't come under some kind of physical attack of some description. So there was, I could give you a 2-hour podcast on that alone.
Yeah, it's a known fact in Ireland the firefighters get a lot of fucking shit.
Yeah, I've been shot at, spat at, fireworks thrown at.
Oh my god.
Drawn on me, you name it. That's another night story.
Here's another topic for another day.
Yeah.
Name or talk about a student who most resembled the Balrog, and you had to show down your.
God damn it, Bob! I started writing this down because you said it was a topic for a podcast. We're not talking about students who look like Balrogs.
But as Darren said as well, there's been a lot of instances where knowing what the situation could unfold into, but being able to defuse it. Purely based on what you know, and what you know is going to happen if it doesn't diffuse, can often be invaluable as well.
All right, guys, let's go on. We got one more talking point. We've got about five we haven't.
Hold on, Mitch. But Mitch, you never answered that one yourself.
Who cares?
No. I'd like to hear it.
I was a bouncer for about 4 years in Peterborough, and as you
can
imagine,
just out of curiosity,
for a while it was at Copperfields. I don't know if you remember Copperfields.
Yeah, I do. You weren't a bouncer when I was going there.
No.
I never would have got in then.
Way before my time.
I think a little after. And there was a bar on Lansdowne Street called Moviola Cafe.
I used to work there.
Yeah, I was a bouncer / DJ there for a while. So
I was a cook. Seriously. No, I used to cook there.
There were a few times where it looked like it was going to come down to a fight, and... It's interesting the thought process I went through, especially at Moviola. I remember one instance specifically where there was a guy who was being really belligerent. I was trying to talk him down. Like, as a bouncer, I thought, look, there were a lot of bouncers I worked with who believed that their purpose in life was to beat people up. My perspective was my job as a bouncer is to talk people down. But I remember this one guy specifically. He was really drunk.
And I had backed him out the door, so he was just outside the door, and I was kind of standing, leaning against the door frame, and he's got his fists up, and he's like, oh, I'm going to fucking kill... Like, he was being all belligerent, like drunk guys are. Maybe the three or four times I've been in these kind of circumstances, it's a really interesting process. Once my brain clicks over to the fact that this is going to be a fight, I get, like, I'm very anxious beforehand. Like, oh my God, this is horrible. What am I going to do? Blah, blah, blah. But as soon as it crosses the line from potential to actual, this is a fight now. My brain gets very...
A calm settles over.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. A calm settles over. And in this guy, with this guy particularly, I remember having my hands on the door frame. And he had his hands up and he was ready to come. And I'm thinking, okay, when this guy rushes in, I'm going to pick my left leg up and I'm going to do a side kick, and that's what I'm going to do, and blah, blah, blah. And in a weird way, this is a weird thing to admit, we stood there for a few seconds in that pose. He just kind of dropped his hands and walked off. And part of me was interestingly disappointed that he did.
Well, because I was... Your adrenaline's up.
Yeah, I was... But this is the point that we were talking about earlier. It became a very intellectual process when I had made the mental jump from this might happen to this is going to happen. Like Darren said, it was calm and I understood in a very intellectual way what was going to happen, and this is what I'm going to do. It was a really strange circumstance. It was very calm and it was very serene.
It's also a realization that this is one of those times that you know, this is a pivotal event.
And to this day, I'm actually disappointed that it never played out.
There was many times where I talked my way out of a fight that I look back and I wish I had just fucking floored the guy.
Hey,
there's the art form.
Stupid martial arts ethics.
A funny anecdote on that one.
Yeah, go ahead, Len.
I was at an ATM machine taking cash out one evening in O'Connell Street, Darren, down near the Gresham Hotel in Dublin City Centre. And I kind of got this vibe. There was a couple of guys hanging around. I said, these guys are going to jack me at the ATM here. So one of them come up and he subtly said to me, take out as much money as you can. So you're getting shanked. So I just said to him, I said, you sure you want to do this today? And he goes, what do you mean? I said, well, there's three of you. So you need to have a discussion among yourselves. So who wants to be what? I said, well, one of you is going to be a corpse. I says, the other one is spending a couple of weeks in intensive care, and the third one will probably beat the shit out of me.
This is Jack Reacher shit.
I says, you guys
have a chat. I was about to say.
I said, you guys have a chat among yourselves over which is which, and then we'll get it on.
You just confused the heroin addict all the time.
I was just going to say, that's exactly, it didn't compute with him, and it just bamboozled him. He just said, you're some kind of comedian, are you? And I went, that's how it's going to go, pal. You make your choice and let me know who's who. And it just walked away.
Okay, guys, there's one more talking point I really would like to address.
Can we get another drink?
Oh, do you want to take a pause for another drink?
Just
want to
top my glass up. Yeah, just top my glass up.
All right, guys.
I have the foresight to open a bunch, so I've got no problem. But
Tom's got a trough of booze in front of me.
I guess I'll do your just for the hour.
All right, taking a break. Go do your thing, and we'll be back in 2 minutes. Okay, guys, let's tackle the last talking point before we call this a night.
Tackle.
Tickle.
Let's tickle the last talking
point. Tickle the last tackle.
Let's tickle the last tackle with the tickle and the pickle. All right, let's head into the last talking point. We brushed up against this a few times when we're talking about kata. But here we go. Does kata have a place simply as an aesthetic presentation, or does kata have to be part of the foundation for practicality in order to have any value? In other words, is there value for kata if it's not practical on any level?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Move on.
Oh. All right, folks, we're done.
I don't think we have to argue the point. It does. It's as simple as that. Like, we can.
But does it?
Yeah.
Well, as long as you get something out of it, then it
exactly.
does.
That's exactly it. Like, I don't. I think everybody can give their opinion and give the benefits of kata and disregard kata because it's not practical or whatever that. But at the end of the day, if you're getting a benefit out of it, then it becomes practical in the sense that you get benefit out of it by the whole definition of it.
Presumably, everybody's seen a demonstration of iaido, which is sword drawing.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's all kata, and that's all non-practical because they're not killing anybody. And there it is. It's a whole martial art in itself, and the whole idea of it is the frame of mind you're in while you're doing it.
Is there any practicality in gymnastics? But we love to watch it just by the sheer...
We're not claiming it's an application of defending.
The thing is, that touches on exactly the topic of this whole podcast that Mitch brought up, and that is how much martial is in the martial arts. Like, there's none in gymnastics, obviously. There's a bit in sword drawing. There's a bit in Aikido.
Take a football player that decides he wants to get into MMA and he ends up surpassing somebody that has no athletic experience that just wants to train, right? So there's football players that are in the UFC that had no martial arts training. Like, there's people that grow up in martial arts and practice it all their life and they're not good enough to make the UFC, but you got a football player, but due to his athletic ability and everything he's done in athletics in
talent.
Sport enables him to cross over to the UFC because of everything he's done before that. So it's nothing that he did before that was martial, but due to the athleticism, it got him into it. You take someone that's really good at gymnastics and he's got the flexibility, the speed, the timing and all that can transfer into martial arts way better than the average person that just wants to take martial arts. Well,
a lot of that is genetics too.
Of course, but it's also, when I'm gearing it toward the person that dedicates his life to athletics or gymnastics, you dedicate your life to that, you're training your body to do athletic things. That is all transferable to martial arts by the sheer nature of it.
As sure, but
someone that just walks into karate and learns how to throw kicks and punches but is not very athletic, or they don't really train in the same athletic discipline that it would take to be a good gymnastics person.
Yeah, I'm not sure how this relates to what we're talking about, but I used to have a thought that every minute where I wasn't practicing karate was a minute I was spending unlearning, like not learning karate, and it was a detriment. It was a waste of what could be time spent learning it, and that was a good motivating factor for me. But it just brought it to mind when you said that the gymnastics person who dedicates themselves to gymnastics and then switches over to martial arts becomes really good at martial arts because of their athleticism. And I don't know where I was going with that, and that's the end.
There's a quote here from Funakoshi. His quote is, he says, kata is the signature of an art. He says, perhaps the reason kata is associated with karate's art form, because it's a work of art. While there is no clay to mold, the practitioner is the clay, and their endeavor is to master their body and mold themselves into an incredibly moving sculpture.
Didn't we have this as a talking point on a previous episode about making up our own kata?
Yeah.
There's creativity there, I'll tell you.
You should have made that quote when we were talking on that podcast.
I only spotted it this week.
Yeah, Lenny, what the hell?
Sorry.
I'm
only human.
It's a good quote, and it makes sense.
Okay, let me put this question out there. Since we've talked about kata as a valid pursuit on its own, without any linkage to practicality, would you practice kata if there was no practical application from that kata?
Would you practice kata on a desert island?
With a monkey?
That is the monkey.
That I fashioned out of palm leaves?
But seriously, would you practice kata if you didn't feel that kata had any application to any sort of practical perspective?
Here, I'll answer that right now, because at that tournament, I really wanted to do a kata. and I couldn't remember any. And the reason I couldn't remember any is because I don't practice it anymore. And the reason I don't practice it anymore is because I personally don't get any value out of it.
That's a really good question, Darren. So do you feel yourself any less of a valid martial artist because you don't do kata?
Yes and no. Not...
God damn equivocator.
It's difficult because I do like kata for all the reasons you said earlier. And I wish I had kept it up just for whatever self-satisfaction I get out of doing it. I don't think it's practical, but that's not why I practice it. I practice for other reasons, and I miss those reasons, and I wish I had kept it up for those reasons. I don't think it's practical, and it certainly hasn't diminished my abilities as a martial arts because I don't practice it, but I still miss practicing it, if you know what I mean. I don't think it has a practical application for what I want to do. Therefore, I don't practice it, but I still wish I had kept it up for different reasons.
For my part, I don't mind not practicing kata anymore. It's fun to try and remember, like, 20 years ago the kata I used to practice. It's comical. But these days, to stand in front of a makiwara and just repeatedly punch it is my idea of kata these days, and the fulfillment that I get from that is plenty for me.
I think there's an argument to be made, Bob, that doing that, just standing in front of a makiwara and doing a technique over and over and over, is every bit as valid a form of kata as the more traditional kata that we practiced.
It's kata with physical resistance.
I think kata
is performing a technique without an opponent.
I think
the makiwara board is almost the same effect.
I think kata is more a mindset than anything, and the mindset you have when you do kata, or when I do, I can't speak to anyone but myself, but when I do kata and when I stand in front of my makiwara and just do techniques, the mindset's very, very similar. Look, I don't think kata needs to have a practical application. I love kata just for the aesthetic purpose, just like I love Aikido for the aesthetics. It looks beautiful, and I love watching well-performed kata.
You spoke about mindset there.
Watching it and performing it is two different things. When you're performing it, there's no aesthetics because you're not watching it. There's been countless times where I perform something and I think, holy fuck, that was good. And then you have someone watching going, okay, you were off there, the timing was off there, your kicks were sweet.
That's a great point. It is. Whose perspective is more important?
Oh my God. Guys, I think we need to have I've been avoiding it because we keep touching on it on every podcast, but I think we're going to have a podcast specifically about kata because it touches every podcast we've ever had, I think.
But you spoke about mindset there, Mitch, and again, it's another one by Funakoshi. Funakoshi says, kata teaches the practitioner how to enter into a mental state at will. Thereby, it enhances your ability to enter this mental state in an actual encounter, which is the main reason kata is practiced. That's not my quote now.
No, fair enough. I think kata allows
you... I'm beating up on Gichin Funakoshi. I'm not beating up on you, Lenny.
I think kata allows you to enter into a particular mindset, but not any mindset. I don't dismiss that quote. I don't wholeheartedly
agree. What a piece of crap this Funakoshi is.
I practice ketamine for the same aspects.
Oh, God damn it, guys.
Oh, good God.
Ketamine number one.
When did you ever think you'd hear ketamine mentioned in a martial arts podcast?
All right, guys, look, I think we've gone about as far as we're going to go in this podcast. Thank you so much again. This is the No Mind Podcast. Any questions, comments, put them on the No Mind Podcast Facebook page, my personal Facebook page, or again, email me at nomindpodcast2021@gmail.com. And we're done. Thank you guys so much, and we're out.
Bye.
Was it weird that I was sitting here, I leaned back in my chair and I had my hand raised while you were saying all that? As if I was in front of an audience going, that's right, podcast over, Morgan.